Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Major changes in zoning codes for Baltimore City, the first in more than four decades, went into effect a little more than a year ago. The changes were designed to streamline development review processes and simplify the rules regarding zoning laws. But there's still jargon to contend with, legal processes and fees, and schedules to abide by. The average citizen, the person affected by zoning and development decisions, is often in the dark about those details and how to take part in the discussions that shape their neighborhoods. To help residents have a voice at the table, the Department of Planning will launch the Baltimore Planning Academy in the fall. The six-week course will also address the residue of longtime discrimination in Baltimore City planning and how to rebuild a more equitable city. Tomorrow, at the Baltimore Museum of Art, you can get a preview of the course content at the BMA Open Hours event called Removing Racism from the Structure. Here to talk about the course is city planner Martin French and Stephanie Smith, Assistant Director of Planning, focused on equity, engagement, and communications. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you
for having us.
Good morning.
Stephanie, how did the idea for the Baltimore Planning Academy come about?
Well, in 2013, there was an opportunity to do a very geographically focused planning academy in East Baltimore. And that was basically a response to the fact that there was a lot of things happening in the Johns Hopkins footprint, and there were also communities just outside of that footprint that didn't necessarily know what's going on. So we thought this was an opportunity to help people understand the rapidly evolving kind of landscape, what it could mean for them to have a more organization around planning. And it was a three-day effort. It was an intensive, so maybe about over a week and a half of three sessions. And there were 80 to 100 people over those three sessions that participated just in East Baltimore. So we did this in cooperation with the Community Planning and Housing Association, CPHA, and NEKC. So, I think it was, really evident to staff at that time, there's a thirst for this knowledge. There's a desire to better understand these systems, but we didn't have the staffing at that time or the ongoing financial commitment to be able to do something like this. So it was something that I think our staff realized, wow, this is an untapped kind of set of resources that people want but don't know how to get. And another thing that staff noted at the time was that people outside of East Baltimore were trying to be a part of it. So they realized this is bigger than East Baltimore and what's happening around Johns Hopkins. There are people all over Baltimore who would like to know more. And the opportunity presented itself to revisit the Planning Academy when I arrived a year ago, kind of charged with really upping our equity and engagement efforts. And it seems like, how can we revive something that was really successful, but in a way didn't have opportunity to continue and make it, more institutionalized?
Martin French, what is your role in the Planning Academy?
Well, my role will be basically organizing a presentation concerning zoning issues. As people may know, as you pointed out, Baltimore City has a new zoning code, and there are important moments when communities can be involved. One of the most significant would be at zoning hearings themselves in front of the Board of Municipal and Zoning Appeals, or BMZA as we refer to it for short. And it's important for people to realize that they can make an effective presentation to the BMZA at a zoning hearing for or against a particular proposal for a particular property in their area. The big problem that we have noticed over the years is that a number of communities may have specific feelings for or against a particular proposal, but they have not been able to express them effectively at the zoning board. And because the zoning board has to make its decisions based upon specifics of state law and the requirements for making findings for or against a proposal, they basically, like a judge in court, have to be presented facts that they can use as a basis for their decision. If those facts are not presented, they can't find them for themselves. And what we've noted, of course, is that usually the proponents of something that is in front of the BMZA have done their research. They know exactly what to say and they know how to say it. A lot of the community people do not have that similar ability or background. And we feel that this academy in particular would help to level that from the point of view of the communities.
I hear what you're saying, but I think some people might listen and say, wait a minute, why does the system, not necessarily the planning department, but the whole legal system put the onus on individual citizens to match the level of discourse that the law would like to have, as opposed to changing the system so that ordinary folks can just show up and say what they want to say?
Well, they can show up and say what they want to say, and they do, but the problem is that what they want to say may not be what the BMZA can use as a basis for making a rational and legally defensible position concerning a particular appeal. And a lot of communities don't grasp that right away, that there may be good reasons from the community's point of view why something needs to be revised or even rejected as a proposal, but they can't express those points in a way that fits within the context of the zoning code. And unless it fits within the context of the zoning code, the BMZA has no choice but to go with what has been presented to it, and in some cases that runs against the interests of the community.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with two people from Baltimore City's Planning Department, Stephanie Smith, Assistant Director for Equity, Engagement, and Communications, and City Planner Martin French. We're talking about the Baltimore Planning Academy, a six-week course that will launch in September. Stephanie, what else will people who attend the Planning Academy learn about?
We definitely knew we wanted to give kind of zoning 101, which Martin kind of foreshadowed in some of his remarks, but also kind of an overview of what the land use and development process looks like in the city. But we also want to give opportunity for people to do deeper dives around not necessarily what I would call, an elective per se, but if you really want to know more about historical preservation, we're going to have opportunities for people to kind of deep dive there. I know for some of the applicants, and we have had nearly 200 applicants in just a few weeks.
And you've only got about, 35 slots?
30. But we're going to do this next year, so we're thinking it just makes sense to approve two cohorts at once and do it again in the spring.
How are you choosing among the 200? What factors?
One of the things that I wanted to lift up is, you know, the mayor has a violence reduction initiative that is focused on target geographies in the city that have, you know, disproportionately high rates of shootings, homicides, and so forth. So one of the things, when you do a mapping overlay of where those communities are, a lot of them are also in communities that are highly distressed from a land use perspective. So if you were to look at the 1937 housing security map, the redlining map that many people are familiar with in Baltimore City, many of the communities that are the violence reduction target areas are also in the same areas that in 1937 were victims of redlining and today still experience the harm from those past decisions. So we want to make sure that we're prioritizing participants who live in communities that overlap with the VRI, as well as people who live generally in areas that are of higher distress. Because there's a relationship between having vacants, a lack of commerce, a lack of access to healthy food, and the violence. These are all kind of reinforcing realities. So, you know, many of the applicants already are applying from these communities without even the awareness that VRI will be, you know, part of it. We did make it clear in the application that we are going to prioritize people that are living in historically disinvested communities. And I think that was appreciated in looking at where the applicants are hailing from. There's a desire.
Well, let me pursue that. The description on your website says the course will help, quote, embed equity, close quote, into city planning. How will it do that?
The biggest part is about you can't have an equitable conversation or process if only the same people are involved in it repeatedly, right? So, for example, there are parts of our city where community members have their own attorneys, their own architects, their own folks that really know how to navigate these complex systems. So they're able to really engage with both us, the BMZA, and other actors in city government. We want to make sure that we are not just having kind of superficial interactions with people who don't have those type of resources. We want to make sure that people feel that they have access to kind of, you know, assert their concerns in a way that will be constructive and that will actually have impact. People really want an outcome that will be beneficial to their community. And if they didn't have the strategies or the correct information to be impactful, now that they have it, they seem really thrilled to finally be able to share that with other members of their community.
Martin, you're nodding while she's speaking.
Well, I'm also thinking in terms of the planning process in general. People need to be able to express their concerns and then relate them to specific physical changes that should be made or physical changes that should not be made in their communities.
Give me an example.
Well, for example, where we have vacant land in a number of parts of the city, there are various developers who may come in and say, well, I want to build this or that on that vacant land that happens to be under the control of the city right now. The community may or may not agree with that. In many cases, the communities are starting from a disadvantage in relation to that developer because the developer has the knowledge, has the people who can find out what are the requirements in the city code, what are the requirements in the zoning code, and so on. The communities don't have that ability, and they often don't have people within their community as residents who can do that. And what we're trying to do is present information to people that they can use, knowledge they can use, to help basically balance out the idea of development should be, and the community says, well, no, the development should be something different, and have the community have their fair say, and quite frankly, have an opportunity to shape that development, because ultimately, a lot of developers would rather have a consensus with the community than fight the community just to win their point. And if there is no community input that's realistic and reasonable and based upon the requirements of the laws and the codes, the developers don't really feel obligated to handle that. We would like to change that, and that's the intent of this.
What happens after the Academy course is over?
Well, that was one of the things we thought about in 2013, was that after it ended, we were concerned that there wasn't kind of like a follow-up. You know, there wasn't funding, there wasn't something proactively kind of bringing people back together. So even in the application process, we ask people, you know, what are the things they like about their neighborhood? What are the things that they want to tackle? So we're really trying to shape at the end of the 6 weeks an idea that is actionable for that participant in their community. And we'll be following up 3 months after, 6 months after, to kind of check in and see how they're doing. We were really inspired by the Philadelphia Citizen Planning Academy. They are kind of a national model for this type of effort. And that's what we thought was distinguishing about that effort and some other municipalities, was that Philly was really following up with people. So it wasn't just this episodic, that was a great 6 weeks. We want to make sure that people feel supported. And if they need to be kind of connected with other resources, if we can refer them to make sure that what they learn will be sustainably applied. And also the beauty of this is that with a cohort model, if there are classes or sets of information presented in subsequent classes that were not provided in maybe the cohort, the first cohort, for example, they'll have opportunity to drop in and be able to get this. It's not one and done. If there's something you need a refresher on, you know, we want to make sure this is more of an ongoing, because ultimately we want the cohorts to learn from each other. There are going to be some people that have a lot to share and teach one another about successes and challenges in their own community.
I want to ask you about the open hours event at the Baltimore Museum of Art tomorrow. It's called Removing Racism from the Structure. Martin, what's that about?
We took a look a number of years ago at Baltimore City as a physical environment, and we realize that there are many factors in the city, physical factors, which essentially disadvantage a lot of people. And those factors didn't just happen by mistake. They were planned. They were planned over generations, quite honestly. And we have a number of areas of the city where, quite frankly, there was no encouragement of investment. There was actually a conscious effort to cut those areas off geographically from other parts of the city and for what we might today call areas of opportunity, such as the job centers of the city. And our feeling is that we need to stand that the problems they're facing today are problems that have been around for a long time and have very deep roots in terms of timeline. So one thing we would be presenting would be essentially a snapshot of some of the things that Baltimore City as an entity, as a combination of a government and private sector, have done, which have ended up producing very disparate results in this city. And then we're basically going to be challenging people to think about what has happened and what it would take in terms of creative ideas to undo some of those things. We may not be able to undo everything, and it may take a few generations, quite honestly, to undo what generations put together. But we would like to get people thinking about it and started to work on it.
Some people might say that by question, some Baltimore City residents might listen to that description of how decisions were made and especially given the way you say the planning process has to work under law, and say it's still going on. There, is it different?
So long as there is uneven distribution of knowledge, it will continue. I think we've pretty much concluded that. And I think any reasonable observer would say that in the disadvantaged communities of the city, there is an incredible lack of knowledge. There's a lot of emotional feeling, some of it's anger, quite honestly, but there is not a lot of knowledge about how to solve the problems that they face. And we know city government isn't going to solve those problems alone. We know the private sector isn't going to solve those problems alone. We're actually looking to encourage the citizens to join a partnership, basically, of the public and private sectors within their own communities, but in joining, shape how that partnership produces the results.
Stephanie Smith, in your view, what would be the best possible outcome of the Academy?
That people will have concrete changes in their community that they can build upon. We know that there's not one project that someone's going to take out of the Academy that's going to change all of the challenges that a community is facing. But I think that people feel researched enough, studied enough, like they feel like we've identified all the problems. People are looking for some wins, you know, things that are tangible. So intent is irrelevant, right? I think a lot of times we assume that inequity is because people are consciously trying to undermine their fellow man. No, you can be nice, you can be good. Your intent is irrelevant. If the structure is designed to yield certain results, the only way we can have different outcomes is if we alter the structure. So even kind of sharing this information, though it seems modest, it actually could be transformational because it will build an awareness. And that awareness will have power behind it, not just like, oh, this is some news you can use. This is really giving people kind of the skills to really be on the offense and not simply on the defense. We want people to feel like development isn't happening to them, that they're really manifesting a desire that their community wants.
Thank you for talking to us about it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Stephanie Smith is Assistant Director of Equity, Engagement, and Communications at the Baltimore City Department of Planning. Martin French is a city planner. He's worked at the planning department since 2004. We've been talking about the new Baltimore Planning Academy that starts up in September. You can get a preview of what will be covered and join the discussion tomorrow, Saturday, at the Baltimore Museum of Art Open Hours event from 2 to 4 p.m. at 10 Art Museum Drive. Admission is free. We have a link to that and to how to apply for the Baltimore Planning Academy at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Quick break now, On the Record, and when we're back, a Stoop story. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.